Solskjaer has done it!
Leicester City have won the Premier League.
Scholes against Emil Heskey. Could it be five? Yes, it is!
Frank de Boer seeking out Dennis Bergkamp. Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful!
Hello, welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lappin, and joining me this week I've got Shane Lees.
Hello.
And Richard Hill-Hudson.
Good evening.
So apologies for we've had no shows the last 2 weeks. We had a few technical problems through school holidays and stuff. So, you alright, lads?
Yes, yourself?
Yeah, I'm good.
Snowed in.
See, I'm down south. Just a bit chilly down here. That's about it.
I'm getting blown by Emma at the moment.
Doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah. Don't know who Emma is, but...
Alright, so I thought we'd start with a few quick stories before we get into the main show. So Real Madrid are considering a move for Bayern Munich striker Robert Lewandowski in the summer because they think it'll be too difficult to sign Harry Kane.
Lewandowski's made motions with his agent for a while now that he's wanting to move, and I think a fair few big clubs are registering their interest in him. Real Madrid, though, as a club, really need to do something, I think, this summer.
Lewandowski makes sense. He's definitely a step up from Benzema. He's an out-and-out striker, which is what they need. But I do find it weird when they say too complicated to do a deal for Harry Kane. Is that saying either Spurs are too difficult to do business with, or is that just a subtle way of saying going to be way too expensive in the current market? Which one do you reckon it is?
Probably the latter, because they don't seem to have ever had problems dealing with Spurs.
Yeah, and I know Levy's a bit well known for being difficult, but how much would you reckon it would actually cost to get Harry Kane in the current market?
You're looking at $200 million again.
Yeah, I think you wouldn't be looking at more than that. And yeah, I know that is an absolutely ludicrous sum of money, and I rave about the money in a game and all that lot. But if you're Real Madrid and you're looking at all of this from a financial and footballing perspective, you can afford that, can't you? You can afford to pay PSG-style money. You're not exactly a poor club, Real Madrid. So it just seems that's almost a bit defeatist, isn't it, really?
They're not a poor club, but if you look at what they've sort of spent in the last couple of years compared to their usual spend, they've really sort of reined it back of late.
Is that because Spain's so poor and they get subsidised quite a lot by the government or something?
It could be. I think it's more just them trying to be practical in the current market. I mean, you look at the signings they've made. They've made things you'd almost have considered to be buff, quite a few years ago. Yeah, players like Isco, good example of it. So I just think maybe they've kind of changed from the Galactico policy. Maybe it's a bit more rare now rather than almost one every season, which is what they tried to do before. Which, I can't actually criticise it. That's a policy that makes a lot of sense. But only if you're Real Madrid and it works. If they're doing what they're doing this season, it doesn't work, so they've got to change it again.
I think as well, one of the big problems that they've had is that they've not been able to out-muscle the teams like they have used they used to every summer. If Real Madrid went in for a player in the summer, every other club would have to be shoved aside because Real were in there. And the last two seasons, they were clearly wanting Pogba, and United offered more. Obviously, they wanted De Gea at one point, and then the fax machine broke. but then last summer, they wanted Mbappe. PSG offered more. There's other clubs now that can offer bigger wages and bigger money up front for the players.
See, I do agree. I think in terms of, as much as within football, the money at the top end has gotten so much more ridiculous than where it is at the bottom end, it is sort of equalising within each sort of area, if that makes sense. All of the top clubs can now afford all of the top players. Whether or not they've got the pool to go and get them is now the question. And I think Real Madrid, a lot of that allure has kind of been broken a little bit. I think now the only players they can really sort of say, if we come in for them, we'll get them, or maybe the Spanish players. I think they're the only players they can really say that's the ones we'll be able to get if we try, and no one else is really going to be able to compete other than maybe Barcelona. But yeah, I think they've, a little bit like what happened to Man United in more recent years, they've kind of lost a degree of that, facade of invincibility they had, always going to be at the top, always going to be a big club. Now it's kind of a case of, there's others knocking about now. There's other really big clubs who can do this. So it's, I think it's a little bit of their image has been shed.
I think it's sort of as well, Ronaldo as an individual. I know he's still knocking him in the Champions League. But in La Liga, his form has been shocking, and they've relied on him so much over the last few seasons. Now to come into a season and he's not performing, you've got Bale that's constantly injury prone. So they've not got those options that they used to have, and there's quite a few players that are in the twilight of the career now there. So
yeah,
they're going to have to do a bit
Modric.
Of...
Yeah, if you haven't got your big players who are able to go and perform, like Ronaldo, you need the ones who are, you know, your consistent players, players like Ramos and Modric, and they're getting to the point now where they're not going to be able to play every single game in the season, a bit like what's happening with Iniesta. So it's a really difficult one to say for Real Madrid, how they're going to pull themselves out of it. Barcelona managed to do it by making some very, very clever signings of like some Rakitic and so forth. I don't know how capable Real Madrid are going to be of doing that, not in the current market anyway.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very interesting summer for Real, because I think they've got to go all guns blazing, but as they found the last two summers, there's other big, big clubs that can outspend them now.
Yeah, I've said it a few times on the show, but the second one of these clubs goes in for one of these players and gets a bid accepted, or they're making, you know, ovations to move on that player, a lot of other clubs then suddenly come in. And it's not just the big clubs like PSG and so forth. Chinese clubs will come in and see if they can tempt them out with money. So it's a lot more open for competitiveness in the transfer market now.
Right, and apparently Alan Pardew will be sacked if West Brom fail to win at Watford on Saturday. He's had a woeful 10 years of a foot, one win in 14 games.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's bad. You know, he's not won in 14, was it? That's not a good record, no matter which way you look at it. And he was brought in there to try and get him out of the situation. But I suppose you've got to ask, what was he really brought in there to do? Was he, A, brought in there to, if they do go down, make them competitive in the Championship? I don't think so. I think he was brought in to keep them up. Or was he, B, brought in to try and improve the style of football and hoping that would, you know, lead to results? I think it was more of that situation. They wanted more attacking football. And for all things, you can knock Pardew. When his teams actually do play well, they do play good attacking football.
They're probably hoping he has that good half a season he always has.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, I actually know quite a few West Brom fans, and admittedly, I was talking to them about four or five games ago. They were saying, you know, OK, we're still not winning, but it's a lot more tolerable to watch what we're doing. At least we're trying to win now, rather than trying to draw and still losing. So I think it's improved, but... If the results had improved, people would be saying, you know, it's a bit like what David Moyes did with West Ham. They're on the right track. But because they've not got the results as well, then they're not on the right track. And I think that, in my opinion, if he's got them playing the football the kind of way they wanted to, but not getting the results, for me, that falls more down to the players, not the manager. Mm. And at what point do some of these players who are just completely coasting in that team, at what point do they get sacked?
Mm. You've got to think a few of them are probably going to be moving on in the summer. But they'll move on to bigger and better clubs, and no blame will be put at their door. I know a couple of West Brom fans, and they for so long wanted Pulis out of the club because of the style of football that he plays. But that is the whole thing is, do you want to play crap football and stay in the Premier League, or play nice football and play in the Championship?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, Barrett, if West Brom do go down, and they are probably looking most likely at this point to go down, I do worry about what's going to happen to that squad, because there's a lot of older players who are going to be thinking, either I go somewhere for my last payday or I retire now.
Yeah,
the younger players aren't that good. The mid-level players, a lot of them can move on, so you like some Johnny Evans and so forth.
Johnny Evans in his racist contract, if they get relegated, he can get released. No, he can get above $3 million.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's real potential for that West Brom side to just be ripped apart, and that's when the new Chinese owner, if he's going to show his, you know, proper colours there and see whether or not he's going to invest in that side and get able to completely rebuild, that's when we'll see if they're a club that can do that. But yeah, if I was a West Brom fan, I'd be worrying, because the players they've got there, if they go down to the Championship, I'd wager there's fewer than four players in that first team at the moment who will still be down there with them.
Wow.
And who have they then got and signed? Do they manage to actually get better players than they've got, at least better for the Championship players than they've got? I don't know. I think they could be in a, I hate to say it, in a little bit of a Sunderland position where they've got to rebuild, but they do not have the time to do it.
Yeah.
Pardew's one for me that I just don't rate as a manager. I think he's one of them that when a team's doing well, it looks good for him, but he's not one that will make a team that's struggling do better.
Yeah, he'll make the good times a little bit better than they would have been otherwise, and he'll make the bad times a bit worse than they would have been. We've had him at Southampton. When it was good, it was really good. Problem was, we just all knew he was a dick. And he was pretty much hated by the entire fan base, the board, the players, and that was why he really got he lost his job with us.
But when you get four of your main players, you know, like your captain and such, going across, you know, or having a piss up in Spain, and one of them, you know, they steal a taxi.
Yeah, Pardew is quite notorious for allowing a relaxed culture around these sorts of things at his clubs, which is fine if you're a mid-table team and no one really cares what they're doing outside of their, you know, footballing hours. When you're in the relegation zone, it's a bit like Lescott when he was at Villa sharing a picture of a car heat. You think, my God, the fans are suffering. Don't be morons about this. Die quietly.
And that's it. You can see if it was a few of the, you know, the youth players and a couple of the 21-year-olds or something doing it. But when it's Johnny Evans and who else was it that was involved in it?
Gareth Barry, he was the one who actually sold the taxi.
It's like, oh, come on.
It's a little bit like Leicester players when they had that thing in Thailand. I'm calling it a thing to be generous. If that had been the high-profile players, it would have been like, right, that's a real big problem. But they kind of managed to sweep it under the rug enough because it was their youth players and they could just sack them. What do you do when it's your most valuable player, your captain, like one of your most experienced players? How do you really go and explain that? I think they've just not even tried to and gone, right, yep, that's happened. Yeah. Crap.
Right, so they're 7 points off safety, 10 games to go. Are they down?
It could turn around, but the problem, I think, is they could try and go off and get someone new to save their season. A, who would they get? B, really, is there any point? Are they going to be able to do it? I don't think they're down. It could still turn around until it's mathematically gone. I don't think any team's ever down. Look at Sunderland all those years. They managed to just about stay up. Everyone always thought they were down at some point. But I'd say, even if they get rid of Pardew or keep him, at this point, I think it's a bit too late to repair. What I think is the real problem is those players in that team. That's the problem, and I don't think anyone's going to be able to fix that.
How far up do you reckon is everybody's in danger? Because between 19th and 8th, there's 10 points between them.
I'd say anyone up to Watford.
So anyone, so 33 points and below.
20th to 10th. I'd say any of those players are in, any of those teams are in trouble, because that's when you've got, it can turn around within two games.
I'd put Everton in that mix as well. They're one point ahead of Watford, but they've been absolutely shocking again.
Everton, yeah, I think the only reason I've discounted them from that is because I think they've got quite good fixtures. I can't be absolutely certain about it. But yeah, but I don't mean they have the hardest fixtures in the world. Yeah, the next couple are Burnley away, so maybe get a draw there. Brighton at home, Stoke away. So I think they'll be all right just because they've got the fixtures and they've only really, I'd say, got to get 7-8 points at maximum. I think
they've up against a lot of teams that are also sort of fighting for their lives.
Yeah, but I think they'll.
I reckon they only need one more win. I reckon 37 points will be okay to stay up this season.
I think it'll be more than that this season. I think it's going to be at least 40 points to avoid 18.
Because it's a funny season where you've got that sort of 6 or 7 clubs at the top that are safe and absolutely miles away. And then there's not really a mid-table this season. It's West Brom and then a big chunk of teams.
Yeah.
So it's coming to this part of the season where normally, if you're at the bottom of the table, you want to be playing a team mid-table who's pretty much already packed up for summer. But there's nobody that's packing up for summer.
No, I mean, I'll put it this way. As a Southampton fan, I am very worried because I look at our fixture list and I think we are in real danger of going down. We've got, in the next couple of games, we've got Stoke at home, Newcastle away, Swansea away, but I think that's been delayed because of the FA Cup game. Then we've got West Ham away. And you think in that one, okay, yeah, we could get maybe 9 points. That would probably be a very good achievement to win 3 out of those 4 games. After that, Arsenal away, Chelsea at home, Leicester away, Bournemouth at home, Everton away, Man City at home. And look at that one, I think Bournemouth, Leicester, Everton are the only ones we couldn't get results in. And then if you actually put that on to how many points we have, I think we're going to struggle to get 40 points. And I do think it's going to be a high finish this year. I think we're in real danger with that fixture list.
It's just full of 6-pointer games coming up for so many clubs.
Yeah, I'll put it this way. For Southampton, our next two games are Stoke and Newcastle. If we don't win both of them, I think we're down. I know that sounds ridiculous to call it 30 games, but we're not going to get results against the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea, City. We're not going to do that. I've watched us play this season. We fold against those teams. So those next two games, they are our biggest ones. If we can't do it then, we're not going to have enough points in the rest of the season to be able to stay up.
Well, who will Liverpool get in the fire sale then?
Ryan Bertrand would probably be the good bet. They don't have a good left back, do they?
I thought Forster as well. He's a goalkeeper.
Forster is absolutely rubbish. I pray he goes to Liverpool.
He's probably better one they've got.
He doesn't even play for us anymore. He's on the bench. We've got Alex McCarthy in goal as being to it. A Crystal Palace reject.
Alright, shall we go on to the first round of Sunday Pitch then? I think you'll like this one.
Oh, I don't like that little laugh.
Not that clearly. Oh, this is based on League
Two. It's not as bad as it was last 3 weeks ago when there was impossible questions and easy questions. It's not as bad as that one. So I want you to name the most common first names in the of players in the Premier League era. So I've got the top 10 first names.
What? Are you mental?
So, Hero, you can go first.
David.
David's number one. 87 Davids I've had. Shane?
I can't even think. John.
John's number four. 57. John's.
Yep.
I've played the Premier League.
Chris.
Yes. Ooh. Chris or Christopher, 51.
Gary.
I'm pretty sure there's a stat that nobody's been called Gary. A new child hasn't been called Gary for 20 something years.
I was just thinking Gary Neville, to be honest.
Hear it.
Robert?
No, you would think Robert, but no Roberts.
Paul.
Yes, Paul's number two, 79.
I'm just thinking of Man United players at the moment.
James.
No. Let's take the lead, Shane.
I'm going to stick with my Man United players policy and go with Andy Cole.
Andy or Andrew, yep, 53.
I can't remember the other 52 Andys.
Townsend.
Marshall. Danny or Daniel?
Nope. Nope. Right, last go, Shane.
I'm just running out of names at this point.
There's quite a lot of boys' names.
I'm going to go, I'll just go with my dad's name. Have we had Michael?
Michael. Yeah, it's 44. So well done.
I've got a brother as well, I'll use him next.
No, that's it. You've had 5 goes each. So you could have also had Steve or Stephen, 62. You could have had Mark, 53. Kevin, 45.
Kevin?
Kevin.
How have there ever been that many Kevins? There have not been that many Kevins born.
Kevin is have the highest amount of goals, Kevins. 490
or
something.
Kevin Phillips.
Yeah, he had 90 odd of them. So. And then you could have had Lee in its various forms.
Lee,
yeah. 43 Lees have played the Premier League. So, congratulations. After the first round, you're winning 4-2. Shane.
Lee Chopra? Was he a player? Or was that Michael Chopra?
Michael Chopra.
Jeez. How did you find this out? Did you just Google all of the Premier League players and start counting names?
No, Sky Sports did a article on it in October.
That was a slow news day.
You were very bored on lunch.
It was one of them suggested articles at the side of the page. I was like, ooh, that sounds interesting.
The thing is, you read that.
So Pochettino said that the VAR confusion in the first half of Tottenham's 6-1 win over Rochdale was embarrassing, and he fears it's killing the emotion of the game. Do you agree? Did it really slow the game down that much? Was it an extra 5 minutes, do you reckon?
I said before it came in, I didn't like it. I still don't like it.
Is it just teething problems, or do you think there's actual problems with it? It doesn't work in a game like
that. As he says as well, I think it just takes away a lot of the human element of it. I want referees to make mistakes, and I want controversy. And it's bringing controversy in it, but just because it's shit.
See, I personally, I can't remember where I saw it. It was someone who said, before all of this VAR stuff, people were moaning every week about decisions getting wrong. They're saying, it can't continue like this, not when the money in the game is this much. Can't be this many wrong decisions. now the VAR's in, they're moaning and they're going, oh, you know, VAR isn't getting every single decision right. Oh, it's slowing down the game. Oh, it's not quite right. I've concluded people will just moan really about anything that they can. Look, yeah, is what they're doing at the moment correct? No, they're not doing it right. The fact that we couldn't have just learned from how cricket and rugby do it is just stupid. How we're doing it where the fans don't know what's going on is the worst method of doing it.
You'd think at Wembley with them huge screens they could just have something saying video referee looking at this or something.
Yeah, no, what I've seen is people
saying...
Isn't
there a rule with that is that they don't like the fans getting a bit uppity when there's a controversial decision?
I'm not sure.
Well, that's just reality, isn't it? That they're going to get a bit uppity when there's a... They get uppity anyway. That's just how it goes. I've seen people saying that, you know, not every club has the same resources to have big TVs. Like in League One, they don't have the resources. Or, you know, this doesn't get every decision absolutely right. No one said it was going to get every decision absolutely right. And no one said this was going to be universally applicable. But the idea is it gets more decisions right than it will get wrong. And it can improve at least quite a few games. So just because we can't solve everything doesn't mean that we should then go, well, we'll just try and solve nothing and go back to the thing that wasn't really working before. Because there were too many wrong decisions. Let's face it, we could go back in time and get Frank Lampard's goal against Germany allowed with VAR. We'd be all up on that, wouldn't we?
Yeah, but we'd have got the 66 goal disallowed.
Oh, that's fine. Look, they didn't even have that technology back then. It's fine. But like Southampton, we had a goal Doucouré scored against us. We'd have won that game, but Doucouré scored a handball goal, which was so obvious I can't believe the referees didn't see it. At VAR, that would have been disallowed straight away. That's 3 points. That's us in a much better position for getting, you know, not getting relegated. It's got to be in the game. Every other major sport has managed to incorporate video referees into the game. Football is not special. Football is not an exception to this. We're just doing it wrong currently. All we've got to do is look at how rugby do it and say, right, okay, to introduce this into the game, we've got to make a couple of other changes as well. One of them is we've got to mic up refs. And they're going, oh, but players swear. All right, tell them to stop swearing. They swear, book them straight away. They'll stop swearing pretty quickly after that. Or if they go, oh, you know, it's going to be really difficult to implement this more generally. Right, of course it is. It's going to be difficult to link this to TV screens. Solve that problem. Oh, there are grey areas where it's 50-50 decisions. Is there enough contact, isn't there? Right, okay, so sort out the rules. Sort out the rules. Get onto IFAB and just say what the rules are. Because rules shouldn't be grey. They're black and white. Mm. You can either kill someone or you can't. That's a rule. There's no, oh, you can kind of murder that person if he was a bit of a dick. It's, did he try and kill you? That's fine to go and kill him. Did he not? Right, don't kill him. That's wrong. Shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, but there's still the ones that's like, is it a penalty or not? What ones where...
Exactly. Clarify the rules. That's all they got to do. Say, right, is it a case of if there's contact in the box and he hasn't touched the ball, he can go down as a pen? Right, that's the rule then. Is it a case of it has to be enough contact to force him to the ground? That's the rule.
Yeah, but what is enough contact?
Well, I'll put it this way. We'll have the referees run lines with each other and have them kick each other. Right? And when it's hard enough for them to go to the ground, they'll know what to look out for. Because, I'm sorry, that is basic. Every fan can see it in every stadium. When one of these players goes down, we can say, yeah, that wasn't enough to go down. And we can say, yeah, that was enough to go down. There's common sense.
You say that, though, but after every match, you'll go to all the pundits, and if there's four pundits, two will say it should have been a penalty.
No, that's different.
It shouldn't have been.
That's different. That's what's happened there is there are certain pundits who have gotten so used to this being part of the game clipped and going down, despite the fact you would never have gone down if you were in a bar fight with that. Yeah, they've gotten so used to that, they're now tolerant of it, or it's their club, so they're tolerant of it, or they used to do it when they were playing football, so they're tolerant of it. Go to any fan and they go, oh God, I can't stand that. Even if it wins my team a penalty, I'm kind of a bit embarrassed about it, because you just look at it and think, oh, he's got brushed on the shoulder and he's thrown himself down. It's obvious, and look, if they turn around and say the rules would be different, right, now it is just any kind of contact and you can go down, I won't like that, but fine, they've actually finally solved that rule. So for all the problems that there are, they can be quite easily solved, every single one of them, including the technology problems, if people just get off their arses and actually solve it. Google is trying to treat itself like a special case. It is not a special case. This can be done so easily, and it's baffling that we've managed to bugger it up so much so far.
I totally disagree, because I think there will always be grey issues, because I think you can't have a set rule for every single penalty and situation.
Okay, so are you basically saying that because we can't solve every single problem, we shouldn't try and solve the ones that get obviously wrong?
Yeah, because I liked the game as it was.
But people liked rugby as it was before, and now rugby is better because they introduced it. People like cricket the way it was before, and cricket is now better because of what the changes they've done. They get the fans involved. It's so conservative, this approach of, oh, it was good before, let's not change it. We can make it better. We've just done it in such a bad way, but it's had such a negative introduction. And now people are going, oh, this is maybe just a bad idea, full stop. It's not. It's really not. It's a very good idea. We just need to stop being so utterly incompetent about how we're doing it. If we can just solve, in every single game, what I find amazing about VAR is watch how many times the referees want to use it now. And let's not talk about goals, because one of the rules is they actually have to use it whenever there's a goal been scored.
Yeah.
To check there was nothing wrong before. But let's look at how often they do it. In that Tottenham game, I think it was 5 decisions outside of goals being scored that they went to VAR for. That shows you how unconfident referees have been with their decisions. We're being told they're infallible. We're being told they always make the right decisions. You know, they can't be questioned. They are totally confident in every decision they made. The fact this is coming in, and now all of a sudden they're going, no, actually, I want to go and review a hell of a lot of decisions. That shows you how much they know they've been getting stuff wrong. That's got to be the proof in the pudding we need, but this is necessary. This needs to happen. It does need to be done in the right way. If they introduced the next season in the form it's currently in, I wouldn't be a fan of it. I wouldn't be in favour of it. But it's got to happen at some point. And even if we have teething problems, even if we had a season where it kind of buggers it for a season, if it means the season after that is fine, I'll take it.
Right, shall we move on to the second round of some of the pitch? Right, so
surnames.
It's not quite... Oh,
kind of. As well, isn't
it? Well, not quite that bad. So in the first round, we discovered that David is the most popular first name in the Premier League. So I want you to name Davids that have won the Premier League.
Are you kidding me?
No, Shane, you can go first this time.
Beckham.
Beckham, yeah, he won it 6 times.
Batty?
Yes, he won it once, yeah.
Can I name Davids?
Davids, yeah.
David Luiz,
yeah.
Silva?
Yes, twice.
David De Gea?
Yes.
How many times he's won it?
It says once here.
Huh.
Tricky now. I'm trying to think for United.
Oh, I've got one.
Seaman.
Seaman, yeah. Won it twice.
Just like shouting Seaman out.
You know, I once knew a girl who had a Seaman allergy. It's a weird story. Platt,
yes. He won it once. Platt. Yep.
Oh, he was a great footballer.
Shane, you've won. So.
Oh.
You can carry on if you want. So.
What an anticlimax.
I think he's won it 2 different clubs. David May.
David May's won it 6 times, yeah. He won it once with Blackburn and 5 times with United.
I don't know. The only other David I know, and he's definitely not won it, is that retarded one for Tottenham, who is good at free kicks. Is he? Bentley.
Bentley did win it for Arsenal, yeah.
No, he didn't.
According to this, he did.
Bollocks. Hang on.
According to that Sky article, I won.
David Bentley won the Premier League.
Yeah.
No way.
I think you don't have to play. You don't have to. You're going to have 10 appearances. So if you
come
off
the bench. He had 1 appearance.
I don't know. I've no idea. According to this, he did. According to the article I read today. So.
My God.
Hero, anyway. Do you want to go for your last one?
Oh, is there still another one?
There's 2 left. You probably won't get them. One, I can give you clues if you want. He played. He's Northern Ireland's leading ever scorer. Played for United.
David Healy.
Hero's guess.
David Healy.
Well, you did great. You did 5 all in that round. Brilliant.
I've done a lot of football manager careers with Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
I know whose records needed to be beaten.
Alright, so congratulations, Shane. You're this week's on the pitch. You got 9 out of 10.
Hey, I even got an additional one.
Alright, so Arsene Wenger has dismissed Gary Neville's criticism of his players walking in their 3-0 defeat to City in the League Cup final. Neville called the Gunners spineless and soft bellies during his commentary. Do you think Neville's comments were a bit harsh?
No.
They were harsh in the sense they were harshly worded, but they were not inaccurate.
No.
Is the key point. I mean, I watched that game and I couldn't believe how little Arsenal attacked. I mean, if you're going up against a team like City, one thing you know is as good as they are defensively, they are going to leave you space between the midfield and the defence. Yes, they're going to press higher up the pitch, but if you do the same thing, they will leave you space you can expose. If you've got quick wingers, if you've got quick players, you can expose that. Everyone knows that about City. The problem is how effectively you can actually go against it. Only really the best clubs can do it in, you know, in the best way. But I couldn't believe how little... Well, Wigan, yeah. Wigan's the other one. They did it a totally different way. But I couldn't believe how little Arsenal were attacking City. I could understand them losing. I thought they were going to lose before the game, so I can understand that. I can't understand them losing and having, what was it, like one shot on target? That is shocking. Never was right, but it was a spineless performance. When they conceded that first goal, everyone knew they'd lost that game. Everyone watching it. I was sitting there with about eight other friends watching it. Once they conceded the first one, we all said, yeah, this game's over. After one goal, how can you say that? But we knew that Arsenal were going to down tilt, so this is exactly what they did. The goals they conceded as well were not world-class goals. Some of them were pretty basic stuff to concede. The kind of moves Burnley can do. So I thought it was just a totally spineless performance. Everyone knows I'm a big fan of Wenger. I'm going to be sad when he leaves, because for me it's the end of a Premier League era. But after a certain point, surely these players have got to take some responsibility. They're the ones on the pitch. They're the ones who are just not trying. You can have whatever manager you want. If your players don't try, they're not going to win. And they can say, oh, well, maybe they're just not trying for that manager. Surely you've got to have a bit of dignity, haven't you, as a footballer, to say, Christ, I don't want to go out there and lose and be crap every week. Awful.
Who do you think, like, not sort of manager-wise, but personnel on the pitch-wise needs to be changed?
I think they need to find a leader, somebody who's grab by the scruff of the neck and get them running.
It needs to be pretty universal changes, I'd say. There are too many people who are just passengers. I'm looking at this current Arsenal lineup, the one that they've got going up against Man City. The one player who I'd say is probably one of their better players this season, he's not actually playing, it's Monreal. Monreal is a good player, he tries hard, he's got quality about him. He's not necessarily the best player on paper, but he's one of those ones you think, even if he's older, he should be a part of whatever Arsenal are doing next season. But I look at that lineup now.
Kolasinac. And they brought him in for the same position, and he's 7 years younger. So you've got to think that Monreal's not going to be there for much longer. Is he 32 now?
Oh, yeah, he's 32, but at the moment he is a better player than Kolasinac at the moment. He has good moments, Kolasinac, but defensively he falls asleep. He could be better. That's definitely true. But at the moment, if I'm manager of Arsenal, I play Monreal every week. I don't even think about Kolasinac. I know that Monreal's been my best player. But I look at that team at the moment. I was saying it before the podcast started. Cech is one of those players who I think needs to go, not just because he's an older player now, but because he seems to not really care about Arsenal, about what they're doing. I remember Petr Cech, who would, you know, he'd be coming out for everything. Even after he got a really bad head injury, he'd be throwing himself at everything. He'd be a leader, he'd be screaming at his players. Look at him now, he's not doing any of that. He doesn't care.
When they signed him, all the Arsenal fans were saying, he's going to get Arsenal 15 points a season. He's going to be like what De Gea does for United. He's costing Arsenal 15 points a season. He's not saving them.
No, and to be fair, I can understand what they're saying. It's a bit like, you know, when Man United signed Falcao. And I remember when we did that podcast, the first thing you said was, Falcao! And you said it in a really loud way because you were excited about his goal-scoring record. In the same way with De Gea, I can understand how they had that, not De Gea, Cech. I can understand how they had that reaction. At the time, Cech had been one of the best goalkeepers in the world consistently for about, what, 8 seasons? Yeah. But he's not the player he was. He doesn't care. I look at that team as well. Mustafi, I do not rate him at all. Maybe he was a good player. Maybe he could be a good player. He's not doing it for Arsenal. He doesn't seem to really try. Koscielny, you think if you're a defence who are conceding that many goals, as much as people say Koscielny's a good defender, is he really? Does he organise? Does he lead? What's he doing in that centre of defence that's actually worthy of people saying he's that good? Not a lot. Xhaka, I do not understand what he does on the pitch. Ramsey's a similar one. He has moments where he looks really good, but so does Joe Allen.
Celebrities, doesn't he?
So, yeah, what's the point in that? Ozil, everyone knows what quality Ozil has, but again, if you're looking at players who don't really try or don't care when they need to, he's one of them. Welbeck is a player I admire for Arsenal because, at the very least, even if he's not doing that well, he always seems to try. And those are the players you've got to base your team around when things are this bad. As I said, there's just way too many passengers in the team. Let's put it this way, if I took over this team on Football Manager, I'd probably sell the vast majority of the squad and just go out and buy a whole new one. I'd think, what is the point in keeping some of these players on? They do not care about this club. And at the end of the day, if they don't do that, they're never going to really try and win. The City players, you can criticise them for being, you know, money grabbers, only going there because they're, you know, playing for Pep Guardiola, because they're going to get paid stupid wages. But they care about the club in the sense of they care about winning every week. That's what they want to do. Every single week, we win. That's their mentality. It's about caring about the club. It's the Arsenal players doing that? Do they care about winning every single week? Of course they don't. If they did, they wouldn't lose so often.
You've got to think, with the money that's been spent over Arsenal over the last sort of few seasons, perhaps some of that is down to Wenger and what he went for. If Wenger left, what do you think Arsenal need to spend, and how much do you actually think they would spend in a summer? Sort of net.
How much they need to spend, in my opinion, at the very least, they need one, if not two, new defenders in terms of centre-backs. I'd say two, because I don't think either Mustafi or Koscielny are good enough. I'd say they need to rebuild the central midfield, because it is such an unbalanced midfield. And you talk about the likes of what they've got in there, Ramsey, Xhaka, Ozil. It's too many players who are not going to be good enough defensively. They don't want to come back defensively. So I'd say you need at least another two central midfielders there to actually add a bit of strength to it. Players a bit like that Milinkovic-Savic, who plays for Lazio. That's not unrealistic. It would be a bit.
I think that probably is a bit more than what Arsenal could go for at the moment, though.
Yeah, maybe. It would be a coup, but at the same time, you think they should be able to go and sign someone from Lazio, and that's exactly the kind of thing they do need. After that, Aubameyang, they've signed him, and maybe he could be very good. As I've said, I do like Welbeck, and Lacazette clearly is not going to do it in the Premier League. They probably need at least one other striker who can give them another option. So you're looking at least, for my counting, six players, and I've not included getting in another winger. So maybe we're looking at seven. You're looking at the current price range of actual good quality players who are going to improve it.
You mentioned a new goalkeeper as well.
And goalkeeper, so maybe eight. We're looking at 30 million to 80 million for every single one of those positions. So you're talking about a transfer window where we need probably upside of 250 to 300 million. Of course we're not going to spend that.
They'll have to do that over two or three years.
And then that's when people start talking about transition periods. But the thing is, if you're United, and you get rid of Sir Alex Ferguson, he's retired, that's done, okay, now we're in a transition period, we know we're in a transition period. And you've had Champions League football, you've had success for all those years beforehand, so you know you've got a bit of time with the fans before they start to really get a bit pissed off. Arsenal do not have that time, do they? Because the fans have been pissed off for about three, 4 seasons now, even if they've been winning FA Cups, that's not what they want. They want Premier Leagues, they want European titles, so they don't have the time to do it. The fans aren't going to keep faith from a manager for an entire season if things do not improve quickly. And I don't see them improving quickly, not unless they turn around and get one of the best managers in the world, who can do kind of what Guardiola did with City. But I don't think they can get someone like that. Ancelotti maybe, but then there's been questions about his last few years of management where, you know, maybe he's kind of lost a bit of the enthusiasm for it. But you know, for my money, he's still one of the best managers in the world. But
do you think they would go big like that, or do you think they would go and get somebody that immediately the fans would love in somebody like Vieira or Henry?
According to the Telegraph, the shortlist of replacements includes Leonardo Jarum, Mikel Arteta, Brendan Rodgers, and Joachim Löw. Thierry Henry said he would be interested. So.
See, you say that list to me there, that's a lot of unproven managers.
Yeah.
I mean, the probably the biggest name there is Löw, and as good as he's been for international football, how many years has it been now since he's been out of club football? And he's never done it in the Premier League, so God knows how the hell that will go.
Close to 10 years, Germany manager? I can't think of
it. Yeah, it seems to me like they're going to want to do it in the whole... Sort of what United did with Dave, or tried to do with David Moyes, bring in someone who's a bit younger, can be there for a number of years and develop a club. But I don't think they're thinking realistically. They're not going to have that time to do that. The media will be on their back straight away if things don't improve. They are not going to, you know, let up just because, Wenger's gone now. In fact, things will probably intensify. The fans aren't going to let up because, Wenger's gone now. They're going to go, hang on a second, maybe things weren't so bad with Wenger, a bit like, you know, what happened after Ferguson. There, people were saying, there were a few lean years before the end there. Now they're going, hang on a second, it was all bloody wonderful every single year. Now that we've been
how did Vieira, didn't he take over at New York City this year?
I don't follow. I think in general they had a good season. I think he won plaudits over.
Right.
I don't think they won the league, but I think they did certainly respectable.
Yeah, I tell you what, the problem Arsenal have is they have picked the worst time to go and be in a position where they're not getting Champions League, and it's very realistic they might not do that for a couple of seasons because the clubs around them, they're improving.
Yeah.
Likes of Tottenham. Tottenham Hotspur before, they were never like a regular competitor for European football. Liverpool, even in, you know, the last 10 years ago, not a regular competitor for European football. You look at them now and you think, much as they've still got a hell of a long way to go before they're competing for titles, much better than Arsenal. On their day, they should be Arsenal home and away. And then you've got, you know, teams on the rise, but like Burnley, Everton, if they do turn it around at some point, they could be big again. They could be considerable again. I just, and you know, you don't see City and United dropping off that much. And we've already listed, you know, 5-6 teams there. So that's maybe putting them outside of a Europa League spot.
And all of them can easily match or better Arsenal in the transfer market.
And then after that, you've got the
Arsenal have shackles on them. I know, as they've got the funds there, but they just won't spend them.
And they don't have the reach, I don't think. If you're competing, if you're, I don't know, let's say you're a world-class central midfielder, you're not playing for a great club, you're playing for a club, let's say, like Lazio, and then you've got a whole bunch of other clubs coming in. Chelsea are offering you a deal, Liverpool are offering you a deal, United want you as well, City want you as well. You know, you'll play regular football for Liverpool, for Chelsea, maybe not for your City United, and Arsenal come in for you as well. How far up do they come on your priority list? Because let's say they're offering you regular football in the same way Spurs and Liverpool are. You go to Liverpool, don't you? I'd go to Liverpool. Or I'd go to Tottenham. If I was, you know, maybe a Premier League player, I'd be more inclined to maybe go to Tottenham. You know, Arsenal come down third on that list, right? And we've not even talked about when Chelsea are coming in for a player too, or United are coming in, or City are coming in. Then they're even further down that list. So they're not willing to pay for fees. But in addition to that, as we mentioned before, if you bid for a player now, other teams come in as well. I don't think they can compete with even the Premier League competitors, let alone we're talking about the foreign clubs yet. The likes of Monaco, who can go out and spend money. The likes of PSG, who everyone knows they can blow anyone out of the water at this stage. So they're competing now for players with the likes of, I'd say, Everton, Leicester, that kind of level. That's not what Arsenal is supposed to be, and that is not going to rebuild that squad. So I think it could be, whether or not Wenger leaves or not, I think it's going to be difficult years for Arsenal because they have timed all of this abysmally.
I'm just going to just ask one question before we go. Do you think he'll be gone in the summer, or do you think he'll last to the end of the season?
He'll be gone in the summer.
Yeah, he'll last to the end of the season for sure. They won't want to sack him.
He won't resign, though, will he? He's got a 2-year contract. He's on £8 million a year. So they'll have to sack him.
Of pushing and jumping.
Yeah.
It'll be, oh, I've decided I'm calling an end to it before my contract's up.
Do you think he'll just go upstairs?
I think he has to leave the club if they want to rebuild properly.
I tell you what, if a Football Manager's any indicator, he almost always becomes manager of France after one season. You never know. If France don't perform quite to a standards in in the World Cup, we know where Wenger's going.
All right, so, is there nothing else you want us to discuss?
Winter break's been brought in.
I heard about that. They're going to scrap replays in the FA Cup.
Yeah, and it's going to be the first 2 weeks of February, which I thought was a bit of an odd time, but probably needs the first 2 weeks of March now.
Yeah. Alright, so thanks for joining us this evening. Hope you enjoyed our show. You can follow us on Twitter, it's at V2Football. Check out our website, v2football.com. It's good night for me, it's good night for the lads.
Good night.
Good night.